time now to catch up with Jeff from Cellar Wine. Jeff, good morning.
Good morning, Peter, and good morning to all our listeners.
Yes, mate, how are you?
Lovely day here, Peter. Too bad there's nobody around to share it.
It's getting that way, isn't it?
Yes, it's... as we've talked about before, it's a different world. But Peter, I want to thank all our listeners who took the time to get in touch or with their member or friends or sent letters to anybody, news stations, the Prime Minister in particular, our Premier in New South Wales, and implored him not to listen to some of the ravings that were going on about the coronavirus problem and not to do anything further until we see what's happening. We predicted, Peter, that the virus new cases was going to go down significantly. We made a prediction that it was going to be yesterday about 130, and I think it was hovering around 100 now, so it's going to jump up and down. But the point is, Peter, doesn't sell newspapers. You know, I read more about this probably than most people because you and I chat about it all the time. But every time you look at a chart anywhere, the only things that you see, Peter, are lines, faint lines on there that show where the number of cases are going to go if they double every 3 days or every week or every 2 weeks, you know, where the final number of cases are going to end up. You don't see a single projection showing what's going to happen to the level if they decrease at 10% a day on average, or 20% a day, or 30% a day. And then you could look a week in the future, as we did last week on the radio program, Peter, and you could see at the current rate of decline what the number of cases is going to be in a week. Have you ever seen a chart like that?
No, I haven't, actually. It's always been, push, 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 bad, bad, bad.
Exactly. It doesn't sell newspapers, Peter. When you and I were talking last week and the Prime Minister was talking about the number of cases and that, but he was talking about the published data, as we covered last week, not the number of people that were infected on that day. That figure doesn't show up for 6 days, which from Monday, you know, is basically, because we didn't have Monday's figures, you know, is basically, say, Saturday or Sunday. And as we said, the cases were going to be half because we were declining. And in actual fact, Peter, they turned out to be less than half. And the reason we were trying to mobilize the population was because the government was making lockdown changes 3 times a day. And, without knowing or seeing any effect of what's actually happening. And not that we argued with the lockdown, it's just that we were trying to stop a total lockdown, as has happened in quite a few countries. And, and probably we have here in Australia is these experts, as we call them, incited mass hysteria. And that gets conveyed to the Premier and to the Prime Minister, and before you know it, it's this pandemonium, and that's just about what happened. But anyway, it's become a bit more rational, Peter, and now we've got to think about the future. What are we going to do? It's on a downward slope. Another week, if it keeps going at this rate, it's going to be down to the levels where it's going to be hard to get any lower. If you look at China, who the country, of course, has essentially eradicated the disease, but they're still getting 20 to 30 cases a day. And that's going to happen. But you can't keep a country locked down for 10 years because you've got 20 or 30 cases of coronavirus floating around. You have to learn to deal with it, Peter. And that's where we're going to be in a week, maybe 2 weeks at the most. We can't keep locked down. We're destroying the country. We've talked quite a bit about the fact that Sweden has not locked down. They still have sports events and everything. And they're slipping off the curve a bit. And I think probably it's possible they might have to do something. I think they're introducing social distancing. But I noticed that the chief scientist in Sweden, in an article in the Guardian, this morning has been very critical of the countries in Europe and how they're handling it, particularly the UK. And he has said that the UK is not handling it properly, and the UK is destroying their economy, which they are, and we're destroying ours, Peter. And the U.S. is being destroyed at the moment. The U.S. is still ahead of the curve, and I notice they're down significantly in cases today. But the point is, the money that's being spent in Australia and in quite a few other countries is not sufficient on the preventative. Peter, it's kind of like drugs, you know. In some countries, they find people with drugs and they shoot them or hang them. Some countries spend billions on education of young people and that to try and prevent the problem from happening. And coronavirus is a bit like that. If you spend the money, the billions and billions and billions, instead of having Safeway and Safeway, geez, Coles and Woolworths hiring 10,000 people to help take the 4 billion money from the pensioners at inflated prices, they should have put a huge amount of money and hired those people as basically virus detectives. I know we're tracking people now when we find a prime carrier, but we don't test enough, Peter, and we don't do enough at the prevention side. And that's where the future is, Peter. Eventually the economy goes back to work. There's still 20, 30 cases, 50 a day, something like that. And we need a lot more testing, a lot more track down these people, these prime carriers. So, and we've got to face that issue. The world's going to divide, Peter, unfortunately. The West is going to get control of the coronavirus, and then they're going to, eventually they'll start, you know, flying and visiting again. But the third world is going to be a long time coming along, and there'll be travel bans. And, you know, we're going to have to live with it, I think, but we'll get it down here, but we'll never eliminate it. It's like weeding a garden, Peter. You get out there, you pull all the weeds out, and you say, gee, that was a good job. You get up the next day, and, you know, 5% of them come up again. So,
oh, haven't I seen that?
Exactly. And I think, we didn't talk a lot about the disease or anything else because that's not our expertise. But I think it's worthwhile saying a little bit about the coronavirus because we've had a lot of them, Peter. We've had the bird flu. We've had MERS. We've had the swine flu. We've had SARS. And all these have basically come out of Asia or Central Asia somewhere. And, you know, I had caused havoc and had various levels of death rate and whatever, and they disappeared. SARS is one that's interesting because we talked about it before. From the time it was initiated or, you know, the first infection in China to complete extinction was 9 months. And it went through the world and killed a lot of people. People were a bit more wary of SARS because it was killing, I think, 6 or 7% of the people that got it. And coronavirus is apparently, well, looking at China as the only country that's been right through it, if their figures are accurate, it's going to end up about 4%. And that was the figures I used in that mathematical analysis that I sent out. But if it's 3%, the analysis that I sent out is even worse. The higher the percentage, the more conservative the analysis is. But the reason why SARS was easy to identify and get rid of, there was only about 12 or 13% of people that got SARS that had mild symptoms. The problem with coronavirus is the people that get it, 85% are asymptomatic or mild. So half the people out there don't even know they've got it. And that was Europe's problem. There was 500,000 people nearly had it before they mobilized. And that's a problem when you don't know the population's got it. And that's why preventative is the way to go. Is that lots of countries have drive-in testing stations. You think you got a bit of a temperature, you go to a drive-in station, they test you, Peter. Here, you can go to the doctor, and the doctor says, oh no, you don't meet the criteria, we're not going to test you. It's a lack of resources to test. You know, you've got to get at the fundamental problem, and that is right as it breaks out, Peter. There's that little town in northern Italy, we talked about it not last week, maybe last week or the week before, 3,500 people that had been declared virus-free. They did an experiment. They tested all 3,500 people for coronavirus, and I believe the number was they found 89 people with no symptoms. Okay, so there's your problem in a nutshell.
So they need as to... They need to get onto it, and very quickly.
Yes. They're spending billions, but it's, you know, once you let the horses out of the corral, Peter, is there not much point in, you know, fooling around with a corral? You got to spend the money to prevent the problem from arising. Look, in the world of diseases, and I say again, I'm a mathematician or engineer, I'm not a epidemiologist or a doctor, but there are good diseases from a country point of view or a citizenry point of view, and there are bad diseases. And a good disease, unfortunately, if you're looking at infections, is Ebola, because the symptoms show up in a few days, Peter, and people die within a week. And 90% of the people die. So the disease kills itself out. It doesn't travel because it's very quick and it's very obvious when somebody gets it. And that's a kind of a good disease. We've had many bad diseases and some in the not too far past, like tuberculosis consumption. You know, that was a bad disease because it's slow. It's fatal, it's contagious, you know. Now we have, of course, ways of treating it, but in the old days they didn't. You know, we have some very famous sisters, English, the Bronte sisters in England, you know, wrote some amazing stuff. They all died in their mid-20s, late 20s, because of tuberculosis. So it's, and AIDS is another one, a very, very slow disease. We've got treatments now, but previously it was fatal. It takes years and years, and so it spreads worldwide. And that's the problem we've got a little bit with coronavirus, because being asymptomatic. So we've got to do the testing. We've got to, and there's been lack of resources. Now it's, you know, like we've had, what, six flus in the last 25 years or 30 years, and we don't have in Australia enough masks, enough ventilators. Look, even annually, Peter, there's 13,000 hospitalizations, or 15 to 18, depends where you look, hospitalizations due to the regular flu. And last year, there were 12 times the average deaths. There were 3,000 deaths due to the flu, the regular flu, in Victoria last year, including 10 children. You know, we're nowhere near that with the coronavirus. The difference is, of course, that the regular flu usually gets to old people and to those with immune system deficiencies. Peter, if you have an immune deficiency, you are 40 times more likely to die from the flu. Okay, because it attacks people with weak immune systems, and some of those, you know, compromised immune systems are not that commonly known as immune problems. You know, things like rheumatic arthritis, for example, and, you know, MS and Parkinson's, a few other things we know, but inflammatory bowel disease and even psoriasis, if you've got chronic skin problems, that's an immune deficiency. So, you know, we do have a massive flu problem, and not as much as, say some of the Northern European countries, but, you know, and the hospital has all these visitations. We've reached none of those proportions with the coronavirus. We've only got, you know, whatever we've got, 4,000 cases or something, and we're getting 100 a day. Now, most of those cases don't require a ventilator or hospitalization. So those resources are not stretched. The reason why they're stretched is because of the contagion level. And so they have to make special allowances within the hospital. But we should do that for the flu anyway. Here's a side benefit of the coronavirus, Peter. We're saving probably 1,000 lives of people that would die of the flu. If this hangs on with these levels, and maybe we should have done this all the time, because flu's killing a lot of people, and we seem to accept it. But because of the social distancing and non-visiting to folks' homes and various other things, we've probably saved 1,000 lives. And we're going to save more because the elderly are not going to catch the flu. And with their older age and often, you know, their compromised immune system, they're the ones that suffer the most. So anyway, Peter, we've jumped over the first hurdle. We are going to face the next hurdle, and that's living with it. As I mentioned, Sweden hasn't closed anything down, clubs, bars, football, games. They're on the curve. They actually slipped off the curve a bit, but they're still saying that that's the best way for a country to survive this pandemic. We'll see. I think they have social distancing. If they don't, they're going to introduce it very soon, because despite what they say, their numbers have deteriorated a little bit if you start doing mathematical projections.
Well, let's hope something happens.
Well, next week, you know, if they had produced these curves, if they keep going the way they are, Peter, we're going to be talking about infections levels, which are what is going to continue for years, essentially zero. But it's always going to be like China. Just look at the figures for China over the last 2-3 months, since they had 2 or 3 days in a row with no infections. No new infection. So they started pulling the screws off a bit. But then a plane came in from Iran and had like 300 people in it, and they about 100 of them tested positive for coronavirus. So they shipped them all off to quarantine. And now the cases in China are imported. And we're still bringing people back from all over the place. But I don't notice. I do notice in the New South Wales figures that are quoted, that they're still tracing the results or the test positive test results for foreign acquired, because these people flying into Sydney, and if they're included in the New South Wales figure, you know, we're going to have a problem for a long time, because these people are going to trickle in for the next, you know, 2 or 3 months, Peter, from South America. Big article in the paper this morning about a mother and son, it was, I think, in Argentina that can't get home. And so we're going to face that issue, but we're going to face living with, 30 cases a day. And that's what life's going to be like. And if they don't plan for it now, what are they going to do? They're going to wait until there's zero cases for a day or two, or next to zero. Once you're down, and you know where the infection came from, and you isolate that cell, it's essentially zero, Peter. You know, because you've contained that outbreak. So if they start lifting it, and suddenly they get 15 cases or 20 cases, are they going to put it on again, clamp it down? These are issues that have to be faced. And they're putting the country out of business, bankrupting the country.
Yeah, it's been very savage for a lot of people. And speaking of cases, mate, how many cases have you been sending out?
Well, we just did a pack, and our members have been really, really good, Peter, and they've supported us. They were supporting us before this outbreak because of the bushfires and that, and they have been really good, and I'm really thankful to our members and friends of Acela. We ship free delivery Australia-wide, Peter, as you know, and so we're still in business, and we're still online, and anybody can call us here at the Vineyard, or they can go online at acelawines.com.au. Get a nice glass of wine. And I know we didn't talk about health issues today except for the coronavirus. So maybe if we, on Wednesday, we can do a little bit of that. But here's a piece of advice to all our listeners, Peter. One of the articles I was going to talk about shows that if you consume salt, and it doesn't have to be much, they added 6 grams of salt a day to an average diet, and they found pronounced immune deficiencies, and we're talking about human tests here. Okay, yeah, so if you want to fight off the flu and the coronavirus, Peter, make sure you don't have excessive salt in your diet.
We'll have to hide all the salt shakers.
Yeah, fortunately, I'm one of those people that doesn't like the taste of salt, and I can detect it in any food. I do put it on my French fries because, you know, that's, I think it's brainwashing, Peter.
Chicken salt.
But, yeah, so it's it was in the, that came from the University of Bonn in Germany about 2 weeks ago, no, a week and a half ago, that research was. And they did initially on mice, then they went to humans, and they found, and we've talked about this a lot, Peter, salt is not a spice. Salt is sodium chloride. It is a chemical.
That's right.
So why are we taking a chemical? Certainly our body needs an amount of it, of salt, but it does not need as much as we use in our Western diet, Peter.
Well, let's hope, like I said, hide the salt shakers, and then people won't have it, and they won't need it.
Well, that's it. It's like putting sugar in your coffee or in your tea, Peter. It takes a long while, but once you get used to not putting sugar in your tea or your coffee, if somebody accidentally gives you a cup of tea or a cup of coffee with a teaspoon of sugar in it, you spit it out. You can't drink it.
That's right.
So it's whatever you get used to. And if you can get used to having your tea or your coffee without a spoon of sugar in it, Peter, you're doing great things for your health.
All right, very quickly, mate, people need that organic wine, and they need it now.
That's it, Peter. Now, I did notice in the newspaper yesterday that booze and wine, they were talking about in particular, consumption has gone up so much during this outbreak that the bottle shops are rationing wine.
Oh, dear. People like getting very pleasantly, I would say.
Yes, well, that's it. Either the divorce rate goes up or the birth rate, Peter.
Or the bottles get smashed out the back. Yeah, who said that? All right, man, we'll catch up with you very soon.
Yeah, okay, Peter. Good to talk to you.
Thanks very much. That, of course, was Jeff from Acela Wine. The address to go to, acelawines.com.au. And quite frankly, do it now.